Tantor Audio, the Division of Recorded Books, presents Foundations by J.D. Astra, narrated by Jason Vu. Chapter 1. I rotated the stick on my control pad and felt Tuco's gears whine as he turned left. I pinned the stick in the opposite direction, and he turned around again. I looked down on my fighter bot with one grip claw left and six spidery legs, two of which were half-severed from the body. The previous fight had taken a toll on his systems, but he could take it. I built him to take it. Roars of laughter and shouts of encouragement slipped through the cracks of the door to the stage, and my leg bounced with nerves. I had this. No matter who came out victorious from that fight, I could win. I had to win. A clank boom was followed by shouts of joy and cries over lost bets. My leg bounced harder and the door swung open, casting orange light over the dark wood staging room. Kui, a man with more mustache than face, poked his head into the room. Jiong, you're up in two. Wei Nam Wan. I nodded and he closed the door. The scent of burnt bot swirled into the room, and the heat curled the hairs in my nose. I'd fought opponents this fierce before, with Tuco in worse condition than he was now, but there was nothing wrong with a little more preparation. I set Tuco's control panel aside and pulled my legs up to cross under me. I took a deep breath and closed my eyes, envisioning the Munze core in the depths of my chest. Ma Munze. The magic that allowed me to control Tuco or any machina slipped through my reservoir with anticipation, and I willed it back. The golden-hued, magical essence whipped about in my mind's eye, but did as ordered, returning to the bronze reservoir at the bottom of my core. I had prepared a large amount of Ma Munze the night before, but used more than half of it in the first two fights. If I were to have an assured victory, I'd need more, for Tuco's sake. I knew the fighter bot didn't think or feel, but we had a bond, and I didn't want to see him destroyed on the bedding room floor. The semi-sweet smell of seared wiring filled my chest as I breathed in the ashes of the defeated. I focused my effort on converting the breath to more Munze. The bronze band encircling my core rotated until the large block designed for Ma conversion hovered over the exposed crystal at the center. I needed enough Ma Munze for whatever spells I would use with Tuco, but even more to operate the control panel to move him around. I breathed deep and allowed the energy in me to cycle into the band. Pulling energy from the world around was possible, but difficult and time-consuming. Using the energy that was already in me from the food I'd had a few hours before was much faster and easier, though it did make me hungry sooner. When the energy gained enough volume, I pushed it through the block and into the crystal, transforming it into stabilized Ma Munze. I directed it towards the reservoir for storage and took a breath to clean up the stray energy. I did this practice three more times before the door opened again.
You're up, Kui
said, and my eyes shot open. I pulled the control panel under my arm and looped my fingers under Tuco's spider-like limbs. I followed Kui through the door and into the bright lights of the run-down arena. Linked fences cordoned off the battlefield, strewn with broken gears and metal plating of the bots who'd fought before. Converted street lamps shone down on the dirt-peppered concrete, highlighting glossy puddles of oil and coolant. The people gathered around the blocked-off war zone in layered tiers, and the best seats in the house were right up against the fence. Patrons shouted and flashed bronze and silver kuli to the bookie, getting their final bets in as they measured up me and my bot. Many of them had seen me here before, watching the legal bot fights that happened during the day. Most of them thought they knew what a 15-year-old like me and little Tuco were capable of, but we'd been working on something new. More importantly, tonight was not a legal fight. Paying taxes was a hassle, and I had prepared something special for my final opponent. I crouched at the edge of the fence and pulled Tuco up to my lips. The metal was warm on my skin. I could hear, feel, and see the gears whirring inside him as I transferred the Ma Munze from my reservoir. The shimmering tendrils of sunset gold magic spilled out of my mouth and flowed into the bot like a rushing river. I remained keenly aware of its destination, focusing on all the parts my magic needed to inhabit. When Tuco's reservoir was full, I pushed the rest of the Ma Munze into his one good arm, then down his legs, and finally into the secret compartment on his underbelly.
"Fighters at the ready!"
the announcer shouted, and my gaze locked onto our opponent, Huenam. He was a fighter from inner city, no doubt about it. His pressed shirt, clean pants, and slicked back hair were signs of his status. He wasn't wealthy, but he wasn't bad off. Not like us out here in the outer cities. I knew most of the bets would be hedged his way. Huenam had more money for proper care and upgrades for his bot, a monstrously large thing that looked as though one swift stab between the chest armor plates would spill its overflowing Ma Munze reservoir. Huenam had a large bot for endurance. He wasn't particularly fast, nor good at the controls, but he could outlast most opponents. I knew Tuco's Ma reservoir would run dry long before Huenam's bots would, leaving him inoperable. Limited stamina led to hasty mistakes, so I would have to end it fast or pace myself. I could do this. Huenam smirked as he pointed to me and thrust his thumb down toward the ground. A taunt. The crowd cheered with excitement and looked to me for a retort. I let the challenge roll off my shoulders without a reply, inciting an even larger roar of excitement. We were in Outer City, and while the crowd may have bet on Huenam, they loved when one of their own had the guts to put well-off men like him in his place. The countdown block hanging over the ring showed 10 seconds, and I set Tuco at the edge of the arena. My hands were sweaty against the buttons of the control panel, but my mind felt at ease as I allowed some of my Ma Munze to slip into the panel in a measured trickle. I connected with the systems and listened to their whispered responses as I moved Tuco forward. His legs were damaged, but not broken. 3, 2, 1. The buzzer rang loud and long, and I saw Huenam flinch at the noise. His bot lumbered forward on 2 legs like a swordsman. It shook the discarded parts on the ground with a jingle as it jogged forward and transformed its claw-like hands into maces. Tuco jumped into the ring like a nimble arachnid, skittering towards the first obstacle, an overturned barrel, with the twist of the joystick. He jumped up onto the iron-bound wood, and we waited for Huenam's bot to get closer. I held my leg still as my hand hovered over the newly minted button on the control panel. The secret weapon. Huenam's bot swung toward Tuco with a twist of its hip gears, and Tuco jumped up just in time. The opponent smashed into the barrel, its arm getting pinned in the metal frame. Perfect. Tuco landed back on the split wood with a nimble dip, then leapt again as the second mace fist pummeled into the barrel, trying to free the first. I activated the burst mechanism on Tuco's side, angling him directly over our opponent, then mashed the secret button. The compartment on Tuco's underbelly snapped open, launching a volley of hyper-accelerated shards at the other bot's exposed neck joint. Golden light zipped through the air, smashing into the opponent with a snap-snap-ping. Ma Munze oozed out in waves from the decapitated bot. The crowd held their breath as I landed Tuco on the ground behind the opponent, ready to surge in for the kill. Huenam's bot fell forward into the barrel, its right arm still trapped and hollow neck pouring out misty gold magic. Black smoke curled up from inside it, and when Huenam jerked his controllers back and forth, nothing happened. My mouth dropped open. It worked.
Cheat! He cheated!
Huenam declared as he shot to his feet, his control panel clattering to the floor. The crowd booed, groaned, and shouted protests. But I wasn't afraid. I knew the rules of the game and knew that these people wouldn't turn on me. I'd done nothing wrong. Kui approached the ring and stepped in. He moved Huenam's bot around, then focused his Ma Munze on the damage, making an assessment. He moved on to Tuco, lifting and inspecting, then set him down.
Huenam is defeated. Jiong is the winner,
Kui declared, and I let out the breath I didn't realize I'd been holding in. The crowd gave a half-hearted cheer, glad to have a local win, but most of them lost their bets. A few excited whoops, my best friends, loudest of all, followed the crowd's groans. My sweaty hands relaxed on the controls, and I pulled Tuco back to the edge.
How can you call that a clean win? He used the environment to trap my bot!
Huinam declared as he dropped into the ring to retrieve his broken bot. I'd aimed just to disable it and clean up with a few well-placed slices, but apparently Huinam's designer needed some education on easy targets. Why would he put the reservoir in the chest, and why would he connect it to the absolutely unnecessary head? Kui puffed up his chest.
Come off it. You think you can show up as the wealthiest man in the room and get your way on just that? The environment is a legal part of combat, and we're not changing the rules for some rich inner-city pungban.
We in Outer City threw the word around casually since it wasn't derogatory, but the rich folk really hated being called stuck-up and self-centered, so it was like a curse to them. Really got their blood boiling. Wainom's face was red as he snatched what was left of his bot from the filthy battle arena.
That boy didn't beat me cleanly! You'll hear about this!
Boy. Well, at least he hadn't called me something worse. At 15 years old, I still had a narrow face that made me look more like 13. Though working in the Arboretum had given me the upper hand on fitness compared to others my age. Tuco didn't look like much either, which was why everyone thought we were easy prey. Tuco was a saucer with legs and claws, with plenty of space for secret compartments and surprises. That was why we won. Sehun, my best friend and foreman at the Arboretum, crammed through the audience and leaned up against the fence that separated me from the crowd. He grinned.
You did it again, you crazy bastard. I need to bet on you more often. These odds were amazing.
He tapped his knuckles on his chest twice, then held his fist up to me, though he was pressed against the chain-link barrier. I chuckled and reciprocated the gesture.
How amazing. 10-1, I shrugged.
Their loss. I grabbed Tuco and pulled the Ma Munze that remained in him back into my reservoir. Sehun held the chained gate open for me, and we walked toward the bookie, who eyed me with a wild grin.
My boy Diong.
The mid-50s woman barked with laughter as I gave her a cheeky smirk. She shooed away the groaning losers and pulled me in close.
Next time, I'll give you better odds. You really did a number on that inner-city pungban, didn't you?
The bookie tried to wrap an arm over my shoulder, but fell short by a few inches. I dipped my knees to allow her that familiar gesture. She laughed again, throwing her arm over my back.
I like you. You can come back anytime.
I intend to, but not for a while, I said as I accepted the coolie coins from her other hand. A concerned glare furrowed her brow.
And why not?
Sehun threw himself into the conversation.
He's getting into Bastion Academy for Pungpan losers.
The old bookie's eyes glimmered with excitement.
Good for you, young man.
I held up my hands. I haven't even taken the test yet, but I hope so.
With a performance like that, I know so,
she said and patted me hard, then walked away with a wave.
Best of luck in the assessment test.
Sungtel!
A voice rang out and my hand clamped down on the money. The dispersing crowd took on a feral nature, scrabbling for their belongings and seeking an exit. Sungtel were the kingdom guard, and they were not kind when they discovered illegal activities.
Let's go!
Sehun grabbed the control panel from under my arm, then pulled me toward the rooms behind the arena.
What are we doing?
I asked as he yanked the door shut behind us, locking us in the staging room I'd just come from.
Quiet!
He whispered, and blue-green Rai Munde twisted between his fingers.
This isn't going to work!
I urged in a hushed voice, but allowed him to push me into the corner of the room. I crouched down with Tuco, my fist clamped tight around the coolie that promised my family security. Sehun turned and danced, his Rai Munze creating an intricate web in front of us. Then, he clapped his hands together and pulled back into the corner, shrouding us in complete darkness with his spell.
Just stay quiet,
he whispered as heavy boots clomped outside the door.
How had they gotten in so fast? That didn't matter. All that mattered was getting this money back home any way I had to.
The wood frame of the door snapped as a heavy boot kicked through it. Two soldiers in shimmering red plate mail stepped in. They wore the crest of the kingdom on their breastplates, a wingless dragon twisting around a sword, talons gripping the hilt at the top. The Sun Tao's left hands glowed a soft yellow, while their short swords in their right glowed bright red. My lungs burned as my heart pounded in my chest, and I prayed, "Please, for the love of Moon Tao Yu, let Sehun's Rai Munze be better than it was last time we tried this." Chapter 2. The Sun Tao soldiers walked the perimeter, skipping the corners of the room. They waved their hands under the table, chairs, and cubbies. The first grunted to the second with a nod that said, "All's clear." They'd barely given the room a half-hearted glance, for which I was grateful, of course, and walked out to the next. We held our breath until we couldn't hear the boots clomping on the floor. Then Sehun cleared his munze from the air. He gave me a cocky grin and mouthed, "You owe me." I rolled my eyes and pointed to his bulging pocket. He'd made plenty on me tonight, and none of it was being paid in taxes. Bot fighting was legal, but when it wasn't sanctioned and taxes weren't paid, the king made a huge stink about it, always needing his cut to run the kingdom. Sehun beckoned me to the broken door. We looked left, then right, and when we felt the coast was clear, headed for the first window. We crawled out onto the dirty concrete and brushed ourselves off, before slipping between the trees back to Namnak. We still had to get over the river and past the wall to get home, but at least the Sun Tao wouldn't be on our tail. "That was amazing," Sehun said as we made it deep enough into the forest to avoid the ears of the guard. I sighed with relief. "No kidding. I thought for sure they'd see through your glamour, but you've really been practicing." Sehun scowled. "Not me, though yes, I am amazing. You! Tuco one-shotted that inner-city Pungban. How does it feel to be the hottest bot fighter in the outer city limits?" I rubbed the back of my neck sheepishly.
"I don't know about that. He was stupid. Who puts such a huge reservoir in an obvious place?"
"People with more money than sense," Sehun retorted, and we nodded to one another with a laugh. We were quiet for a while as firebugs twinkled, lighting the way towards the river. Crickets chirped, and the stars peeked out from between wild-growing trees with looping vines that hung over the canopy. The air smelled of dirt and cool water, and the gentle breeze was welcome in the heat. Sometimes the end of harvest would smash us with an early and unwanted winter, but it was warm, a perfect night for a long walk home from a successful bot fight.
"It's not going to be the same without you," Sehun said, and I turned my gaze away from the firebugs to see him better. He was serious, his face solemn.
"What do you mean?" I asked, shifting Tuco in my grip. Sehun shook his head.
"You're getting in, dummy. I'm not going to see you for 6 months."
He punched me in the shoulder. "Who am I going to order around at the Arboretum?" "There's always Nena," I offered, and Sehun groaned.
"Duh, she'd sooner rip my head off than take direction that would save her life."
We laughed, then fell silent again as we made our way to the softly flowing river. Sehun and I stopped at the edge of the riverbank and entered seated meditation. I pulled in a breath of crisp river water air, tasting it with all my senses. I closed my eyes and focused my mind on making En Munze, the magic to control the elements. The band around my core shifted again, centering a smaller block designed for En creation over the crystal. The block allowed me to create the Munze needed to perform specific spells in the elemental school of magic. When the raw energy reached critical mass, I pushed it through the block, into the black crystal at the center, and then outflowed the tingling, neon-blue En Munze through the bottom into my reservoir. One reservoir could store all five of the magic types. Zo, the Munze of body. Li, the Munze of living things. Rai, the Munze of communication. En, the Munte of the elements, and Ma, the Munte of Machina. The reservoir could hold each magic type in it at once, but it had limited capacity. Overfilling with one Munte, as I had done with Ma all night, meant I had very little space left for anything else. I breathed again and cycled one more round of N into the reservoir, just to be sure I had enough. "Ready," I said as I let the magic trickle down my arms to the tips of my fingers. Sehun scoffed.
"I'm not even half ready. See, you're definitely going to get in."
I crouched at the bank and touched my finger to the water. N Munte tingled my finger on the way out, creating ice crystals on the gently lapping edge. I smirked and sucked down a huge breath. I infused the N Munte into my breath, and cold lanced through my chest. I launched the breath spell out through pursed lips. N Munte swirled through the air, and where it touched the water, it turned to solid ice. The platform was strong enough to hold me, so I stepped onto it. Sehun pushed past, leaving me on the bank of the river.
"Thanks, friend,"
he shouted as he trailed his fingers behind, unleashing his own N Munte on my ice bridge that mounted it. Sehun waved from the other side with a cheeky grin, and I rolled my eyes.
"You're never going to learn like that,"
I warned before creating another burst of N Munte to remake the bridge. Sehun's eyes focused on the road home.
"Yeah, but I guess I won't need to cross the river anymore when you're gone."
I put my hand on his shoulder. "You could always come visit me." He blew a raspberry and turned towards the village.
"Like I'd be caught dead at a school for stuck-up pumbans."
I chuckled. "The invitation is always open." He shrugged in the very non-committal Sehun way. "I'd need a visitation visa to get in, and those are pretty hard to get. Plus, I've got secondary schooling to go through, too." "So you decided to go back for another year?" I was surprised. Sehun was a year older than me and had already spent a year in secondary school. He'd said it wasn't for him, that working was the way. "I can't work at the Arboretum forever. I figured school is probably a good place to learn some new skills so I can get out of there before I'm old and decrepit." He moaned and half bent forward as he held his back with one hand and an imaginary cane with the other. We laughed, and I gave him a shove. "You're not much older than me. I'm not going to be decrepit anytime soon. Sometimes I feel like I'm a few years younger than you. You seem to have it all figured out." He sighed and shook his head. "Can you plan my life for me?" I blew my cheeks out.
"I don't have anything figured out. I'm going to get into Bastion.
Then what? How am I going to support my family if I don't get a good-paying apprenticeship? It's taken me 8 months of bot fighting to save up enough for their food for the first year I'm gone. If anything happens to any of them, nothing's gonna happen, so don't worry for nothing." We came to the wall and scaled the short 10 feet easily. It was unknown to us why the Ancient Ones had erected such a tiny barrier, but they must have had some reason for it. Perhaps it had been taller long ago, or much of it had been buried by rising soil and rivers. Whatever the reason, the wall had become a part of our reality we didn't question anymore. When we reached the edge of the farmland, Sehun turned north for his home, but stopped short. "Jiong, it's been a pleasure doing crime with you tonight." He tapped his knuckles against his chest and held them out for a bump. I did the same with a grin. "Likewise." We looked at one another, and for a moment I thought I saw a shimmer of tears in his eyes. Then, he turned away.
"Don't go learning too much. I'm gonna need my technician back."
I waved and we parted ways. The cobblestone roads led me through the center of our quiet town. The general store sat to the north a few blocks, and a few small restaurants peppered the lane down from there. The road home was filled with pop-up food stands for farmers and people selling wares from the kingdom. A small infirmary, the school for kids age 5 to 10, and a few other businesses for mending machines. Many of the buildings were repurposed from what the ancients left behind, and there were still remnants of their touch in each of them. Some had ghosts who would talk about cappuccinos, bulgogi with rice, and more delicious treats. Others had stunning light images of the deepest parts of the ocean or distant planets far away. I wondered if the ancients had left this place to go explore somewhere else,
or if they had come from somewhere else and were just going home. It was one of the mysteries the Guild of Historians worked on every day. If I could just get into Bastion, maybe one day I could be one of them and uncover the secrets of Machina. Maybe I could use that Machina to find a cure for my mother. I turned off the main road and headed down the path to our little cottage. My little sisters, Umdi and Suyi, had been taming the wild again with their Lee control spells. Freshly grown branches from the trees beside the path were laced together overhead like an intricate braid, and fresh-picked flowers, likely thanks to Mini, dangled down from the loops. It smelled like jasmine and tea. Moonlight trickled through the braids, creating a dance of silver as the breeze blew by. I didn't want to be cruel, but such lavish uses of Munze were wasteful. Until we'd all mastered pulling energy from our surroundings, it came almost exclusively from our food, of which we had little. Braided tree paths were a waste of that precious food. Despite the late hour, I decided to walk through the front door. Everyone would be asleep, and I didn't want to track mud across the wall up to my bedroom window. The door wasn't locked, but as soon as I turned the handle, I heard footsteps across the kitchen. I cursed and closed my eyes. "I'm home," I whispered as I stepped into darkness. The silhouette of my mother, backlit by moonlight, was more than enough to raise the hairs on my arms. She stood tall, hands on her hips and shoulders back, hair in a twisted bun on top of her head. I knew by the way she stood, glaring me down in the darkness, that she was prepared to deliver the angry speech she'd been working on since whenever she discovered I'd left. "Sit down," my mother said with a quiet fury. I did as ordered and took a seat in the rocking chair next to the door, then set Tuco and the control panel on the table next to it. She walked around the table to stand in front of me, her hands in the same position clamped on her hips. I pulled the money out of my pocket and held it out to her. "It's another half month of rice and fish." Her chest rose and fell with angry breaths, but she put her hand out for me to drop the money in. The coins jingled into her palm, and when the last hit her hand, she stuffed it away in her apron like lightning, wanting the distraction, my bribe for peace, out of the way. She'd never approved of what I did to earn the money that kept us going, but wasn't going to turn it down if it meant feeding the children well while I was gone. Not that she wanted me to leave at all. "Do you think if they find out what you spend your nights doing, that you'll be allowed to enter Bastion? Do you think you'll be allowed to go to any academy? But you'd be sent to the mines, Jiong!" She paused, lowering her voice with a calmed breath. "You will be sent away to pay off your tax debt and fines. I can't get work, we know this. No one wants to hire a Munte mute. Your brothers and sisters, what could they do? Unbi is the oldest at only 12, Jiong. She can't work yet. She's still in primary, as are the others." I nodded and dropped my head as guilt and indignance warred in my stomach. It was for that very reason I was fighting for the money they needed to survive while I was at Bastion. If I had been caught, I'd have thrown not only my life away, but theirs too. But we hadn't been caught. We'd never been caught. Well, we'd never been detained. "Look at me," she whispered, and I lifted my head. "If you're so worried about us, why not go to a closer school? Because Bastion is the best. They can give me the training and connections I need to get us out of here." And because I wanted to join the Guild of Historians, but that selfishness wouldn't help me in this argument. She crossed her arms. "If you attended Namje Academy, you could still work your job and see us. Sehun is going to Namje." I sighed. "And that's great for Sehun, but it's not my path. I need to be able to take us away from here into the kingdom where you can get real care and my brothers and sisters can go to better schools." She scoffed. "You don't have to worry about me, baby boy. Your father will return with a cure."
Warmth filled my cheeks.
"He's never coming back. He left us." Her slap hit my face faster than she'd ferried away the coins. The swift retribution stung against my hot skin.
She pointed with a hand she'd used to strike me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?